don't have microphones because we're very cozy together. So we just ask, to the best of your ability, that you project, trying to speak loudly and clearly. If folks can't hear, just let us know so we can either, we can troubleshoot and try and find a way to make sure that everybody can hear each other this evening. In the unlikely event of an emergency, we are on the third floor of the building. So our emergency exit, we go down the stairwell, not through the elevators, and out at the exits on the second floor directly below us, and meet in the patio, outdoor, plaza, thank you, area. Bathrooms are down the hall to your left as you exit this room, and there's also water fountains out there if you would like. We do have a portion of our agenda this evening for public comment. We've reserved up to 10 minutes for public comment. I will say, members of the public, if you're in the back and it's really hard to hear because you're kind of nestled in that corner, there's some spaces out here and the water's fine. Feel free to come on in and join us if you'd like, but wherever you feel comfortable. And this evening, the purpose of our meeting is to kick off this process that I know a lot of folks are excited about. There's a lot of energy and momentum around, to establish the charge of this task force and why we're all here together, to spend a little bit of time on governance, and to get to know each other. So we will spend some time on introductions and establishing what's important to you to help us get a running start on some of our evaluation framework when it comes to having those conversations on what's important and what you think should potentially go into a transportation bond measure. So again, an exciting evening. Did I cover all the major housekeeping items? Get out of the building. There's an emergency. That's the important piece. Down and out. Any initial questions from folks? Anything that you feel? Are you in the right room? Yes. Okay. Great. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the team here at Metro, to Andy and Tyler, to set a little bit of our context and dive on in.
So I was going to set a little context with a brief presentation, although the co-chairs were very eloquent and covered most of it, so I will begin to introduce just at the beginning our staff, Andy Shaw, Director of Government Affairs here at Metro, Tyler Frisbee, Manager for the funding measure work, where's Kate Figgerholm, is someone you probably are getting a lot of emails from. Trey Peavy over here, also working on the team. Alyssa Gertler, our planning director. So just so you can put names with faces, Margie. If you... Oh, Margie Bradley. There are other staff here at Metro working on, doing a lot of help. There's also a lot of staff from jurisdictions who we've been working with for quite a long time around in the room. So thanks to all that team. That's one to, for the task force members, identify some of those folks. We can get there from here. I love the words that you said at the beginning. Let me go to the next slide. This region is growing.
Sorry.
This slide has animation now, so I was waiting for that animation to come.
We know
that just in, as of last year, we were attracting 2,000 people per day. Every month, we're attracting 2,000 people to this region. There you go. You can see the growth of this region over time. And we were adding, through natural birth, 1,000 per month. So 3,000 people every month. I think that's about a TriMet bus per day coming to the region. So very significant growth, putting strain and stress on our infrastructure, on our public systems. Go to the next slide. The people that came before us, our predecessors, invested in the housing, in the transportation system, in our parks and natural spaces. They built those things that we're enjoying today. But all this growth is putting immense strain on those systems. So we need to invest in our housing, in our parks and natural area, in our transportation systems. We're talking about transportation, but I think it was also raised that housing has become a very acute challenge. Metro's taken some, moved forward on finding the resources, some of the resources that we need to accommodate affordability in this region. We have more to go. City of Portland stepped up. Other jurisdictions are also taking lots of steps forward. So there's a broader context here beyond just transportation. Go to the next slide. But we know that congestion, the ability to get around on transit, the inability to walk to a transit station or bike to work is putting a lot of stress on the people that are coming here. People are having to find housing further out to afford that housing and get to the place they want to go. go to the next slide. We've done a bit of polling. You may have read about some of it. The only good news is the public recognizes these challenges, and they're very concerned about and willing to take action they're looking for to government to help solve the problem. We have seen very high levels of willingness to invest in addressing our transportation challenges, addressing our affordability challenges, and they're very sensitive to the impacts that investments have on displacing people. So thoughtfulness around how we make those investments in communities has also been high on the public's concern, level of concern. We also know that the federal government and even the state government, for all the work we've been able to do with the state, is not going to bail us out of this problem. The federal government's been disinvesting in infrastructure for decades now. And so they're not a reliable partner on investing in our transportation system, investing in our housing systems. The state, many of us went down to the legislature in 2017, and we were successful in getting a very significant investment in our transportation system, in bus operations, in safe routes to schools, in key bottlenecks. And that was a very important infusion of funds and investment in our system here. But it was about as far as we could get the state to go, given the broad representation that folks bring to Salem from places like John Day. They don't need 30-cent gas tax increase there to build the infrastructure that's required to support growth. We do. And so this region needs to take additional steps beyond those that the state can take for us. All right. Which is where you come in. We helped the council president put this task force together with the view of bringing in voices from our jurisdictions, bringing in voices from the community, bringing in business leadership, trying to attract a variety of different points of view, different levels of points of view, and we're incredibly excited to have you all here tonight and to kick this process off. Let's go to the next slide. Don't start off, though, with no base, no foundation. This region has a long history of policy. The 2040 plan that was adopted back in the mid-90s and evolved since then. Just this last December, after 3 years of collaborative work, the Metro Council adopted the latest regional transportation plan. So we've heard a lot from community, a lot from jurisdictions, a lot from business leaders about what the transportation system should look like. We've also, the Metro Council has adopted a strategic plan to advance racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. We've applied that in the housing measure that we put together and referred successfully to the voters. So that's a solid foundation for policy as well. This region's also adopted a climate smart strategy to reduce tailpipe emissions in the region, which is a combination of land use and transportation investments. So all these things are a jumping off base. We don't start from a blank slate as we work on this together. And the next one. And you're not alone. The task force down in the lower left corner in purple, the Metro Council is very eager to hear all the input you have and is willing to work with you and work to advance the work that you put together. We also plan to do broad community engagement and involve some of our existing advisory committees like JPEX, which some of you serve on early in the morning here in this very same room. So we want to wrap public engagement and broader input around the work that you do and have a feedback loop between this task force and the Metro Council over time as we move this work forward. So lastly, we've got a little video we're going to show here in just a minute, but the people of our region are really eager for the work that you're going to do. The polling work we've done, the outreach we've done, the work we've done for 3 years on developing the newest regional transportation plan tells us people are ready to make the investments that we need in this region to get people moving around faster, safer, and better. So let's get moving. There's a little video that's coming.
We'll do this video is a series of snapshots we did around transportation.
I drive a lot. I have to drive because of my work.
Mire, estoy atorado en tráfico y estoy como 10 minutos de ahí. Ahorita ya voy a llegar.
I work as a remote or community health worker. My work is with Latinos who have a chronic condition, and I work in, I would say, three counties, Clackamas, Montgomery, and Washington. Driving can be a little bit difficult, I guess, moving through three counties, depending on the time of day. So I would say early in the morning, you'll get traffic. Coming back home, kind of the same thing. My previous job, I would just pretty much go to the office. I didn't have to rely on my car so much. I would just take the bus or the taxi to get there. Not the case. And my world changed. I have to be out in the community visiting families. So I have to drive around just to get there in time. You know, we have so many social services areas out here, and you know, low-income families sometimes have to struggle just getting there if they can find a ride. The other part is because my daughter has to get home, you know, sometimes as fast as I can just to spend time with her, just to make sure that, you know, we have that quality time as a family. Because I leave early in the day, and I come back sometimes late.
So I'd encourage you actually to visit that website, which is OregonMetro.gov/snapshot. There's some further videos there that were developed during the process of creating the regional transportation plan that speak to folks that take transit, folks that bike, folks that skateboard, woman drives a truck for a living, and it's a great way to think about how this transportation system affects real people on a day-to-day basis.
So I'm wondering if folks have any initial questions on why we're all here this evening, why this task force, why now is the time for this task force. Ooh, we'll have some jazz music in the background as well. But any questions, comments, points of clarification that folks want to bring up? This is not your only opportunity, but if there's something that you're sitting with right now. No? Gosh, this is so easy. Very easy evening. All right, and I think we'll move into our introductions because we want to hear a little bit from you as well. So we're going to go around our table, and we'd ask that you share who you are, where you're coming from today. So if you're representing an organization or a jurisdiction, or you had a very long drive from Oregon City or wherever, but where you're coming from today, and to share as well two things that you value. So two things that you think are really important that you would want to see put into or applied into a bond measure, something you care about in transportation. We're going to limit it to two. We're going to challenge you a little bit to limit it to two because we have a lot of members to talk to and we don't want to be here, even though we have great stories to tell all night. So how this will work is Jean Lawson, and we're going to introduce each other. We'll introduce ourselves.
Sure.
We'll talk about that later as well. But I'm going to be capturing on our sticky wall that's in the back.
Does that mean it's all down?
Yes, and I'm going to make sure that it's not falling down because it's looking pretty precarious right now. So I'll be capturing those in the back. If there are, if I'm not quite getting it right or I can't seem to capture it in a half sheet, I may jump in and ask you to clarify a little bit because we do want to be able to hold these ideas. And again, we're looking at values, kind of these overarching high-level things, not necessarily projects, although these values might influence the ways that we talk about them, we look at some of these projects. So we will be encouraging you to think a little bit more about what's important, what's the underlying value. Does that make sense? Sound good? Anybody squirming a little bit inside because they hate this kind of squirm fuzzy stuff?
So just to make it really practical, it really feels like warm, fuzzy stuff, and it does accomplish the job, making sure you all begin to understand each other and know why you're here. But it also helps as the team starts taking the information and forming the evaluation framework to make sure we understand what the team needs to be looking at when comparing options and when putting together the packages. So it's a very practical and important piece. You are all here because you bring different values to the table and because you understand and represent the values of this community. So thus we start with this because this is the foundation that we build on. So Allison is your facilitator for this process. JLA Public Involvement, we work on a number of processes and I know probably at least more than half of you. I am here,
I am here to co-facilitate for a few meetings and to step in and cover for her on occasion. Jean Lawson, I'm principal founder of JLI Public Involvement. And Allison has been working with Metro on several key projects. So that's our introduction. So Allison's going to cover the sticky wall, and she's going to grab a little extra tape to save the poor thing before it falls down. And so again, when you're thinking about, if you think of a project that you want, because sometimes that's the only way people can get there, think about why you want that project. That's what we're trying to get to, is the why, what you care about, what you would like this transportation bond measure to accomplish in the end. So, shall we, you've met Andy and Tyler, and I apologize to those of you who ended up having to say
that right with your
That's right, I already told you so. So Amanda, would you like to introduce yourself, your role, why you're here, and a couple of values?
Sure. My name is Amanda Mahadis. I'm a director of advocacy at Latino Network. We are a culturally specific organization that serves the Latinx community in Multnomah, Washington County, collaboration with our county partners. And I would say two that come to mind immediately are one, equity and centering the experience of the Latinx community, but people of color in general. And the second would be around affordability and really sitting with the intersection of housing affordability and transportation and how those affect each other.
Okay, equity and affordability. And I'm going to pause just a little bit to make sure. You good?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, great.
I'm Diane McKeel, representing Mavda Community College Board. I've served on a number of transportation committees, certainly representing East Multnomah County, where we know we're underserved with transportation. And so I would like equity and accessibility.
Okay. And do you, you know, accessibility is one of those terms that can mean a lot of different things. I want to talk about why, what accessibility means to you.
It means being able to have the transportation that that runs on time, that is accessible for all of our folks that live out in East Multnomah County. Sometimes we don't have the infrastructure that's there for the transportation. Sometimes we don't have it going directly to a certain place, that, like an education center, which is, you know, if you can't get to your job and you can't get to your education, you know, those are accessibility issues. So I think that's what I mean. Also affordability, so that you can afford to ride the transit.
So
many people don't have vehicles out there.
So it sounds like accessibility to the system itself, but also accessibility to where you need to get to.
Exactly.
Okay. Casey.
Hi, everyone. Casey Chama with United Orgasm. United Orgasm is a statewide social labor justice organization. Two things come to my mind. Definitely equity and inclusion. I think that seems to be important for all of us, hopefully. And Michael, again, is what Amanda said, really making sure that people who are experiencing the downside of power, particularly people of economic communities,
airports have been facing.
That's one thing. The second thing that is important to me is that for me, I would like to see making sure that this whatever we come up with, we don't look at just a vacuum, as some folks said earlier. That means we have to figure out how it intersects with housing, economic development. So we just need to make sure that we look at all the factors that have to be in terms of the creating a critical transportation system.
Okay, so equity and how it intersects with supporting the other community values like economic development and housing. Okay.
I'm Sheila Fink with the Community Housing Fund in Beaverton, Washington County. And the two things that come to mind are the critical importance of integrating housing and transportation policy, and also it's sort of elevating the variety of transportation choices that people have. I mean, housing and transportation represent most people's household budgets. So for those who are really don't have the luxury of worrying about congestion in their cars that they don't own one, we really need to look at all the options that exist. And so I just feel like a lot of times in transportation planning, we spend more time on cars than all other aspects. So I want to be sure that integrated approaches get.
So transportation choices and the integration of transportation and housing.
I speak out of the Hillsborough mayor.
I'm sorry, I should say mayor.
Oh, that's right.
Often in these groups, we sort of do first name because everybody's at the same table.
No, I know, like Steve, because then you think I'm a thought leader and not just an elected. So. So the point of my two is safety. You know, we had a number of instances, both on city streets, county roads, state highways in Hillsborough, where we had pedestrian fatalities. And so that and that really is important to us. The other thing, I would say, has to do with opportunities. You know, whether that is opportunities for people to have access for jobs that help move them up, you know, an economic ladder, or give them additional, I guess, just options for employment. But also along with that, you know, would be, you know, dependability and reliability for freight and commerce, because that is really important to us, you know, in Western Washington County with all the manufacturing as well.
Okay, so the safety and dependability and reliability of the system.
Thank you.
Leslie.
I'm Leslie Carlson. I'm the board chair of the Street Trust Action Fund, and we are a group that tries to make walking, biking, and transit accessible, safe, and convenient for everyone. And I was asked by my three teenagers to speak to you tonight about the world they will inherit and the climate trajectory that we face now. I think they and I would really like that we create a system that reduces greenhouse gas emissions to the greatest extent possible. And I'm also interested in affordability, particularly as Sheila said, affordability for and accessibility and effectiveness of our system for people who do not own cars. People should be able to get from East County into downtown quickly and easily and cheaply, and we need to think about that over time.
Good evening. My name is Mike Alexander, and this says Director of Diversity and Global Affairs for PSU. The word that's missing is inner room director. Yes, but actually I would like to believe that I'm here tonight as a member of the board of the group called Vital Vision Trust. And it is a group of individuals looking at visioning for the long-term development of the Rose Quarter. And if there is, I would echo all of the sentiments that have been shared, but if there's one sort of pivoting point that I would bring is that this work in the past has been guilty of disrupting communities as we've looked at transportation needs and displacement. And I think we had the opportunity to construct it in a way that it supports the redevelopment of new community. And I'm hoping that the lens we bring to this is one that is intersectional and looks to see how do we create without displacement. And we haven't really gotten a handle on it.
Okay. So I like that, creating without displacing communities. So avoiding that division and displacement that's happened in the past. Okay. Yes, me.
Hi, I'm Tim Knapp. I'm the mayor of the city of Wilsonville, way out on the southern edge of the metro area. This is actually my 11th year as mayor and 16th mayor year as an elected in Wilsonville. Don't have any formal training in running a city, but you learn a lot along the way. I was active a few years ago in the formation of the Metropolitan Mayors Consortium, which is an ad hoc group of all the 25 mayors in the region that come together, and they asked me, and I continue to chair their committee on land use and transportation, which puts me, you know, in Metro's realm a lot of the time. I also sit on JPAC committee, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation that Metro runs on behalf of the cities of Clackamas County. keeps me busy in a volunteer job. The thing that I maybe represent coming from Wilsonville is a small town on the perimeter of the metro area, and as such have awareness of the differences in needs across the area. As an example, Wilsonville is a community of 25,000 people. We host 23,000 full-time jobs. Between Tualatin and Wilsonville, there's about between 45,000 and 50,000 full-time jobs out on the edge. I don't know Tualatin's number, but Wilsonville's 23,000 jobs have an aggregate payroll of $1.1 billion. Annual payroll, $1.1 billion in our little community. What that means is there's an awful lot of people that come from somewhere else to work in Wilsonville. We've got zip code studies and this and that and the other, but just as an example, 4% of our employees come from out of state. You know what that means? That means they're commuting from Vancouver or beyond to come to work daily on the opposite side of the metropolitan area. 800 and some people. And that is played out in various places across the region. The thing that we observe on the south edge is that you can't get to a lot of the places where people need to work or go to school or have access to daily any other way than driving a car, because our public transportation systems do not adequately connect to all the places they need to connect to. It seems to me that until we have a system that actually gives people a choice, well, I can drive today, or I can get on a train or on a bus or on something that I know is going to get me there on time, then we're really not able to give people alternatives that work in their daily lives. We know people need to have a stable job, need to be able to get to them reliably, need to get to their child care, need to get to their schools, need to all those things that people do every day. So I don't know how you translate it into a value, but having a system that works for people and genuinely provides an alternative that works in their daily lives is the goal that I think merits working toward, however you want to word that. And recognizing that our transportation system needs to function in a way that enable people to earn an income that makes their daily lives possible. We learned in the downturn, when a lot of people lost their jobs, that having a family wage, reliable job is a very significant piece of quality of life. And it shouldn't be that is challenged by our transportation system. So how do we integrate that and think about that component?
I'm looking at what Allison wrote, and I'm wondering, and I'm listening to you, and I'm wondering if the heart of what you're getting to is having a functional transportation system that allows people to access, it seems like jobs was the primary thing you focused on.
Yeah, jobs, but the alternatives piece is there.
It's important.
It's important, too,
okay.
Because otherwise we're just going to try to make our system bigger doing the same thing it's doing now.
And I was wondering was whether the primary focus was the alternatives or the functional. And it sounds like maybe the alternatives should capture them correctly, is transportation alternatives that work.
I don't want you to displace one of those with the other.
Okay. All right. We've got to have both. She's got them up there now. She's got functional and alternatives. They're there. Okay. Thank you.
My name is Elaine Friesen Strang, and I am the volunteer state president for AARP. So obviously, I am here to urge us to have an age-friendly lens when we think about the future. I will probably keep reminding you on the next couple of months that by 2030, there are going to be more people over the age of 65 than under the age of 18. And the average person outlives their driving years by 7 to 11 years. So it's important to have that age-friendly lens. But when I say age-friendly, we really mean all ages. It's kids, it's youth, it's safe routes for everyone. The other value that I would have is accessibility. And when I talk accessibility, I'm actually talking that it meets people of all abilities. For children with disabilities, for all of us, as our needs, our bodies change as we get older. And the one thing we all have in common around this table is that we are all getting older.
So Shay's probably So, and I got a note here that the chairs have been supportive of asking the group if they want to just go by first name. So you guys all okay with that? Okay. All right. Mark.
Hi. So I'm Mark Gamba. I'm the mayor of Milwaukee. I serve on MPAC. I'm an alternate on JPAC. I'm also part of the Metro Mayor's Consortium. I would say that the two values that strike me when we're talking about a transportation system that we're going to be building for this next century is that we have a continued impoverishment of the majority of our society. They are becoming poorer and poorer relative to the cost of housing, relative to the cost of living. And if we are not thinking about that when we're designing a transportation system, we will fail. We will leave the majority of our population unable to access the transportation they need. I think a key to that is the diversity of transportation modes and truly robust versions of that, not sort of the lip service that we currently give bike ped and transit. We do better on transit. But I think if we're spending money predominantly on ways to allow cars to get around and not spending equal amounts of money for bike infrastructure, for transit, we are failing. The other piece that marries to that a little bit is climate. We know that we have 11 years. 11 years to solve, in essence, climate change. If the transportation system we are building does not dramatically reduce our carbon footprint very quickly, we are failing. So.
Okay. So climate change and affordable options for those who are low on income, for the growing percentage of the population that's low income. Okay.
Hi, I'm Dave Robertson. I work at Portland General Electric, and I'm also the chair of the Portland Business Alliance at the moment. I also served as one of the chairs of the governor's transportation vision panel a couple years back, and that led into the House Bill 2017. And my committee, so I'll leave with that, so I don't say exactly what Mayor Gamba just said, because that wouldn't sound dumb. I grew up in East Malone County, so I grew up in Park Rose, and I live in Washington County now. So I think between PBA, PGE, East County, you know, I should get 8 values. But I'm taking a couple.
I don't know. I think a few other people here could come up with the same argument.
So resiliency has got to be a play. And the thing that I think, you know, what I thought when I chaired the subcommittee on resiliency and on the governor's panel, I was sort of like the little kid committee that, you know, kids table at Thanksgiving or wherever. I was off on the side. I wasn't exactly sure what they wanted, but it ended up being so potentially devastating for our region in terms of the unpreparedness and sort of lack of resiliency in our transportation system, that it ended up being, if you saw any of the governor's reports and their messaging, it was like top of the list. And so it's got to be something I think as a region we tackle. And that really plays to the sort of PGE need too, because if you do have a large earthquake, we'll standing up the electric system and the transportation system, I think some of what we learned in that, if that takes too long, you lose people, economy, you're just really in trouble. So we've got a real opportunity here to try to address what is a ginormous deficit there, and we could probably, you know, steal some of the data from those studies to help with that. And then the sort of PBA hat thing, I think people have covered sort of mobility pretty well, and I think that from sort of a couple dimensions to that. One is sort of getting everyone to work, and sort of especially communities that have been sort of left behind. The sort of equity sort of lens comes up a lot, but I think we need to be really smart about what an equity lens looks like for all the work we do in this group. And if there's a lot of work that could be done there, it could take a lot of time too, but I think we've got to be really smart about that. And then I think that's true. That sort of mobility is also true for the freight system, and you know, getting people to work, having those people who are at work being able to move themselves and goods around. There's a lot of jobs dependent on that, and I think that's important. And the last thing I'd say is decarbonization. And so we've got a pretty interesting, you know, challenge right now, an imperative, and also, you know, back with the PGE hat on, you know, we're at a point now where we can help decarbonize the transportation system through changing to different fuels, including electricity is one of them. And I think it's really important as we think about planning this system out and do everything that the mayor, Mark, said here. But I think we've got some opportunities to try to make that a system that can enable that decarbonization of the transportation sector, whereas right now, it's the one sector that's growing the most, I think, of all the emitting sectors that we've got. So.
Okay. So if I group the mobility, the various aspects of mobility, you still end up with 3 days. So
yeah, I know. I still
But resiliency, the mobility, and the decarbonization. So.
Did you?
Resiliency to include decarbonization.
My
name is Nolan Lanner. I am Director of Planning and Design for ZGF Architects, and as part of that, I'm a consultant that works on district planning, campus planning, major transportation projects in Oregon and around North America. And I bring to this committee two values. One is really the equitable distribution of the benefits and burdens of our transportation system. Historically, those have fallen on people of color and low-income people. And so as we think about what our transportation system looks like in the future, I think a major funding opportunity like this is a chance to push our benefits and burdens in the right direction. And among those burdens, climate, so I'll have sort of one within parentheses of mine rather than add three. And then the second value is really, as a planner, I like to think about making sure, as we do in this region, that our investments are coordinated. And so making sure that we're funding projects in a way that expands access to the kinds of places that our land use system is trying to create, walkable, opportunity-rich places, we're doing it well right now, but not everybody has access to those places, and so that would be my second benefit.
Okay. And I should have mentioned this earlier, but folks, do look at what Alice is doing, and if you feel like she hasn't captured it accurately, you know, feel free to call her on it.
Yes, if it looks like I haven't captured what you've said. And also, I think at the end, if you'd like to add to this or cross something out, because actually that wasn't what I said, or feel free to interact with us. This is living.
And the stars are just mentioned more than once.
Yes. So instead of writing it and taking up space, we're kind of starting when folks are really saying, this is another thing that's important to me. Sorry. Continue.
No.
So I'm Pam Trace, Washington County Commissioner. And also, I am the executive director of Westside Economic Alliance. I've lived and worked in Washington County for a very long time, although, right, Broncos too. Go Broncos. But there's a couple things about Washington County that I think are very interesting. Number one, we're the most diverse county in the state. We have historically marginalized communities that absolutely we need to have that equity lens as we work through these processes. I feel very, very strongly about that. We're also the economic engine of the state, as many like to talk about. We have less than a 4% unemployment rate. We have a 10% plus poverty rate. So we have got issues that I would agree with Mark Gambo about. We've got to address the accessibility issue. We've got to address the housing issue. So when you ask me what my values are, I would say the equity issues, but in maintaining our economic prosperity, we also address our accessibility issues. In more dimension in this transportation, housing, and across the board.
In case you forgot, I'm Justice Vega Peterson. and I'm obviously Multnomah County Commissioner. I sit on JPAC, I sit on the app, so I sit on different transportation vehicles. I actually got into this transportation work when I was a legislator, and I had carried the Clean Fuels Bill, and there was some discussion about a transportation package. We wanted to repeal clean fuel, so I got dragged into those conversations, and that was how I got dragged into transportation work, although I always came at it from the safety aspects of transportation in my district was always a very important thing for me. So I only have one thing that I want to say, but it's kind of cheating because it's like things that I need. When I approached this, and especially being a co-chair of this committee where I've been trying to have like a broader perspective and incorporate the views of a lot of the people, everybody at this table, as well as the broader community, I think of how transportation builds healthy communities. So I come at it from the healthy community standpoint, and to me that means climate, that means economic health of our region. It means the making sure that we're making investments that build healthy communities in communities that haven't had those investments in the past, so economic justice and racial justice. And really healthy communities in terms of just from a public, straight public health perspective of how do we have people getting out of their cars and walking around and biking and having those options and opportunities. So really this is the way that I'm approaching this work here.
My name is Deborah Dunn, and I have a consulting business, Synergy Resources Group. I work with nonprofits and businesses and government entities providing a variety of services. Why am I here? I'm here, full disclosure, I have a long history in transportation policy and planning with the freight industry. And it goes way back to the late 80s, so it's a pretty deep history in moving freight. And one of the beauties of being in the freight industry is we were always very supportive of transit. Anything that we could do to encourage people to get out of their cars and use transit, the better. So today I'm not here representing freight, but it's pretty hard to get it out of my blood. But I am very concerned in when I think about my values and why I'm here is I want us to think in threes usually, but I'll keep it to two. The two are, we need to think about how we move people and how we move our economy. And our economy is not just through freight, but it's commercial services as well. I don't know if any of you were in the grocery stores at our last blizzard thing. And in a few hours, how many shelves were empty? And as much as we are working to look to moving our goods from closer in, we don't need to bring things from back east to Oregon. We've got it growing here in Oregon. And we're working in those areas, truly. But until we get there, we still need to think about healthy food get on our shelves. And we also need to think about if that earthquake hits, do we want the major pieces of equipment that are going to need to come into this area and dig us out? And what are those corridors? So mine are, we need to think about how we move people through an equity lens, and how we move our economy through that same lens. And it's very broad, and I prefer to give you details that I've seen. But I did work on a project with the National Transportation Research Board on how we move, looking at how we can move freight through smart growth communities. And it was a very rewarding experience in that I served on it for 3 years. But what I gained from that is there are some alternatives that if we haven't considered, I hope we'll have an opportunity to bring those forward.
Good evening. I'm Andrea Durbin, the Executive Director of Oregon Environmental Council. And two values I bring to this table, one is equity and really prioritizing action and investment in underserved communities in our region, addressing accessibility and affordability issues. And the second, which has been brought up, which is the transportation system is the single biggest source of carbon emissions, but also pollutants that impact our health. So really, how do we create a transportation system that is a center for healthy communities, that's not contributing and causing asthma in our kids, cancer in our bodies, but really, how are we avoiding the harm that we're experiencing today from the transportation system and converting to make much more have a positive impact on our community?
So you're not a politician. Danny, intended to go to the city of Beaverton, and I've had the pleasure of being an elected official since 1993, once or another. I have two daughters, four granddaughters who live here, and I'm past president of the Oregon League of Cities, and PENTAC, JPEC, and the mayor, so I really value what I pick up as I travel and talk to people. I was just with 27 other mayors around the country, and we are not alone in what we're talking about, every problem we have. And For this group and this work, my values I'm bringing here is I want to make sure that we serve the employers of the region to get their employees to and from work in a timely fashion, figure out a way to let employees move a little closer, and obviously the freight component. And the second value is I really believe in the equity of solutions that in this region, we need to look at things, make sure they're regional in nature, not local. This is what I think. I might suggest 217 could qualify for that. As well as make sure that whatever we do, whatever we plan, touches every portion of the region here equally and fairly.
So the geographic equity, distinct from the other, and so when you're talking about the employers, it's access to the workforce.
Right.
So we have the issue of access to jobs for people, but you're speaking about it from the perspective of an employer having access to the workforce as well.
Both, yeah. Okay. We can't afford to lose employers in between Beard and Hillsborough. We've got two companies that have 33,000 people with an average salary in six figures. But we also have 35% of the population almost at the poverty line. So that's the dilemma. But without one, we can't have a chance to solve it.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Hillary Barber, and I am the Strategic Initiatives Director for Burgerville. We are headquartered in Vancouver, but we have 42 stores in Oregon and Washington. So I would say, in addition to geographic inclusion or equity, it's that integration. We're thinking also, when I think about regional, I'm thinking of the whole Pacific Northwest. 70% or more of our ingredients are grown and produced in the Northwest region. So how that food gets from the farms to production and then to our stores and then to our customers. So it's how our employees are getting to work, how our customers are getting to stores, and how the food is coming as well. So from the big regional perspective to the bi-state perspective to this actual regional perspective, we're holding and thinking about it all. And I think from a values perspective, so much has been already been articulated, but the diversity, definitely looking at the carbon footprint of business, of agriculture and the food system in particular, is of interest. So I'm pleased to be here and look forward to working with all of you.
My name is Nate Stokes. I'm with the Union of Operating Engineers, local 7-1, based out of Gladstone here. We cover the whole state of Oregon from 5.5 counties in Washington. So we have almost 4,000 members. So my job is to, bring to the table here is I've built tunnels, I've built floating bridges, I've built bridges, and I've built light rail. So I feel like I have a little bit of background on all of the aspects of the transportation side. So the one thing that I'd like and to bring up to this is family wage jobs. I think that's a big key component to this is family wage jobs. And access to apprenticeship programs. As Elaine has said, how many people are going to be retiring and out of the workforce, we need to make sure that there are people to actually fill these jobs moving forward. So that's mine in that nutshell.
I'm Linda Simmons, and I'm a board member with TriMet, and so I'm here representing the TriMet Transit Agency. One of my values and one of the agency's values is really regional mobility, and it really gets to what Danny talked about, that any solution we come up with and we bring forward really touches all aspects of the region. And some of the things currently that interfere with mobility has to do with the fact that we're a region, but we're also three counties. And we have different goals, different rules, different zoning and things. And as a result of that, we enjoy being differentiated as different counties. But there are certain things that we really need to establish in common in order to expedite any solution that we may bring forward that has to do with speeding of moving people through the system. Because the way the roads are designed currently in some parts of the region don't really facilitate that very well. So one of my values is one of the things Danny said, which is truly regional plan. And the other, quite frankly, is accessibility, which ties to all of that. We can provide more accessibility when we get the transit to the various areas.
So on the regional planning, Linda, that truly regional aspect, you noted that we're three counties and, you know, and then other sort of cultures within each of those counties, right. Of course. You're looking for some consistency. Was there some aspect of that that you see as the primary barrier?
It has to do with road design.
Okay.
And you know, it's difficult to drive a bus on a 10-foot wide road.
Okay. And it's particularly how it affects the public transportation.
Exactly. How it affects public transportation. But quite frankly, my definition of mobility extends to everyone. We need sidewalks. We need roads wide enough that you can actually get public transit there, bike lanes to enable people to actually commute by bike if that's what they want. But it's a regional approach so that anything that we come up with has to really provide value to the whole region. It means to get people through and in and around all the three counties.
So when we start looking at, for instance, the corridors and the investments in those corridors,
right.
It would be investments that truly achieve those goals for the whole region.
That's true.
Okay. All right.
I'm Jim Bernard. I'm the chair of the Clackamas County Commission. And I chair one of the most diverse counties, rural, urban, farm, and forest. Probably the least diverse county. We have very few people of color. I'm hoping we can change that. We have some of the fastest growing cities, the richest and the poorest. 70% of our people have to leave the county to go to work. And we have a big piece of land that has 10,000 acres and a possibility of 6,100 jobs. And one old thing that we used to talk about all the time, jobs, housing, balance. It's a value that I think is really important, that I should not have to drive out of the county to go to work. I should be able to find a home, find a job that is a family wage job that I don't have to go to Portland to get, or another county to get. And so, and that addresses pollution, traffic, and all those other things that we're challenged with. I would guess mine is family wage jobs and access to housing that is accessible to those jobs nearby.
Okay. Jobs, housing, balance, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
My name is Marcus Mundy. I'm with the Coalition of Communities of Color, which represents at least six diverse communities, African, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, Slavic, Native American, African American. And one reason I'm here is to make sure that people of color and low-income people aren't just in the videos and aren't just on the cover pages, but they're kind of built into everything we're talking about today. And my two values, I guess, are kind of atypical values. I'm looking for fairness and family, and I have a subtext for each. Like, the fairness to me is the distribution of the resources, so everything related to the contracts that go out once this wonderful bond measure passes, and the jobs that are created, and the systems that are created, the job ladders. That's something that I think Steve was talking about later. You know, we have the tools to build it in on the front end. We have strategic plans and diversity strategic plans and metro 10-year plans. So take all that planning that we did and make sure we're living the values that you've already created, you know, once or twice or three times. And then the family part to me, which was also mentioned by a couple of people, which is the consideration of the complexity about all the systems interacting with each other. You know, right now, probably many people in this room are sitting on housing committees and health committees and education committees and transportation committees and basically all the social determinants of health that affect everything we live in right now. Make sure that when we're building the system, or at least discussing it, that we're integrating these thoughts with all these systems, because you can build a perfect transportation system, you know this, but it won't be responsive to the needs of the families that live in the region. So mine are fairness and family. I just wanted to,
okay.
I'm Jiminy Cricket. I want us to keep on reminding ourselves of why we're here.
I like that. You know, I was telling people, if you think of a project you want, back it out and think of the values. And you took those values and backed it out and thought about what's the driving value of family for all of those. So, gold stars. You all get gold stars. You don't play favorites.
I don't know. Marcus is pretty hard to follow. Hi, I'm Emerald Vogue. I represent the Port of Portland. We operate Portland International Airport, two general aviation airports, four marine terminals, and over 10,000 acres of industrial political land. Two things is hard. Three things is easier, but I'm going to go to two. One is, and it's been discussed here a little bit, so that's intersectionality, and that's in the way that we all think and talk about it, in the way of jobs and housing and transportation. But it's also when we think about the value of investments. Smart transportation investments don't have a singular value. And if we're considering investments that have a singular value, they are the wrong investments to consider. The second is creativity. Because if we're going to find a viable package that's going to move forward, we're going to have to abandon some old ways of thinking about things, and we're going to have to get creative in how we talk about investments, and we're going to have to get extra creative about how we find those resources. So, intersectionality and creativity.
Okay. Creativity, that's not up there.
No pressure, these two. I'm Catherine Williams. I'm at Marvelous Natural, but I sort of grew up in the transportation space with a big focus on multimodal transportation. Sat at JPAC for a while on the regional acts. Nice to see some friendly faces. I think, you know, I would echo a lot of what was already put up on the board. I think it's an excellent starting point. I guess I want to go back to the video and particularly the graph before that described the serious regional problems. And what that sort of says to me is that we have a really big opportunity and responsibility here, because we're tapping into something that will impact every single person in this region, right? Whether it's somebody trying to get home a little bit faster to see their children, which I'm experiencing right now because of just commuting patterns that are happening
related to my work, or giving people safer choices to get out of their cars, or even in their car, a better choice with the gentleman in the video who relies on his automobile for his work. I just think the opportunity to sort of impact people who are living here now and who are choosing to move here at what the rate of 2,000 a month, I think Andy said, and that ability to also preserve the reason why I think so many people are moving here, right? Because we talk about our quality of life and we talk about past investments, but I think we all know that we're a little bit overdue for sort of that next big tranche of transformational investment. So I'm not sure I really nailed the two values in my comments here, but I think that it's such an incredible opportunity because we're going to be able to really tap into something that people clearly care about, and we have to do it right, and we have to do it smart, we have to be able to leverage things. Like, can we do something that gets us a more seismically resilient bridge while we increase transportation choices and drive down commute times? It's like we're going to have to layer on all these things and be super strategic and smart about it, and I'm very excited to do it.
So that we've gone clear around the table, and there was a lot of crossover, and I'm impressed. Because so many of you talked about issues, equity as it compared to climate change, so the overlap in the issues was really challenging. So,
well,
nice job.
I think we might workshop this a little bit and think about these, because there are some clear clusters, I think, that people talked about, and some intersections that equity means some things to some people, but it's broader than that. Think about geographic equity and sharing burdens and benefits and a lot of different things. So I think we might sit on this. And again, if you want to add or interact with this on your way out, I invite you to do that. But maybe come back to you with something that kind of reflects the system that you've outlined and the intersections of all these different ideas that are really related. You know, they all kind of work in cohesion. They're not isolated. So thank you for that. So thank you for your time and sharing.
So, and I trust that you all looked at the, that you got your invite from Lynn Peterson. And how do you feel about the work that you've just done and how consistent that is with the charge that you were given? Do you feel like there was, that it captures, that the charge you were given captures some of this? You feel this clearly goes beyond, while including much of that. Any thoughts?
And if you don't have that letter handy, we can also pass around kind of our next piece of looking at governance, but it includes some of the key points. So we're going to take one and pass it on to you.
Sure. We have some to this. So, those of you who started, after you've listened to the rest, any observations? Folks? Okay. Well, you know, it's funny. I was telling Allison beforehand, I was telling the group, it's like 35 people. It's going to be really hard for everybody to have a chance to talk. I said that the last big group I facilitated was the Automated Task Force for the Rules Advisory Committee. Down, a couple people are here, and I said they just sat there. They didn't always say anything. I think the group gets so big. So you guys, don't be afraid to jump in. We still need that deliberation. Then with that, why don't we go ahead and talk protocols, and then we can have some time moving on.
So the document that you're getting is a two-parter. Half of it is outlining a lot of the background that Andy shared earlier, what we're doing, why is now the time to do that, and a lot of that is from that letter from Lynn Peterson that was sent to all of you. And thinking about this purpose and charge that Andy also outlined in his presentation. And then the second part, when you turn the page, is a little bit getting into our governance. So, thinking about our meeting protocols, and this document was shared with your co-chairs,
So we wanted to open up a little bit of discussion here on some key items. We don't want to spend too much time on governance, but we want to ensure that we're set up for success in the process that everyone feels comfortable with, and how to get to a recommendation by this task force, recognizing that it's a large group. And while everything is very smooth and easy right now, it might not always be smooth and easy. So how can we establish a process? And we also wanted to spend a little bit of time before we end the evening asking what you need to feel set up for success from staff. So just some of those asks are a few things that I think staff are prepared to bring and to do and to ensure, but even do you hate tiny paper items because you're really conscious of reducing your carbon footprint, you prefer to have a digital copy. If that's something that you want, we can do that. So let's talk a little bit about what you need to feel set up for success and some of the ways that you can interact with Metro staff throughout this process. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jean to draw your attention to a couple key items in our meeting protocols. We will not go through this line by line, I promise you that. But that also means you have a little bit of homework. I'm a former school teacher, so I think in terms of homework. I'm sorry if you haven't been a trauma from poor experiences in school. But we'd ask that you review this document with kind of more of a careful eye, but we're going to draw your attention to a couple pieces that we'd like your thoughts on, and also that the chairs have given some thought to and might want to share some perspective that they have as well. So, Jean, you want to kick us off?
Sure. So, as some of you who have gone through this protocol study process with us before, you know we can spend quite a bit of time, but we're going to try and do it succinctly. And therefore, these are really drawn from the most common protocols adopted by other groups. But there are some that are just really important to touch on and make sure. But really, and there's a reason you don't get this in advance. We made that mistake actually was in Washington County when the county said, oh, just use the ones from the other group, send it out as a draft. And pretty soon it was in the media that the county had demanded that the group did such and such when all it was a discussion draft. So this is for you guys to finalize and own. And the first set of protocols is really, you know, everything you learned in kindergarten about working nicely with each other. And but one of those that with a group this large is particularly important to call your attention to is the whole idea of share the air. You know, make sure others get a chance to speak once before you speak twice if there are other people out there that want to be talking. And avoiding side conversations. So some of those. But I do want to move that the elements that are really most important to really address are how you make your recommendations. And I want to spend time on this because people come with different expectations. So this is a group that's been charged with coming together and developing recommendations on what moves forward with this bond measure. And you've been pulled together because you do represent different perspectives, but you are not a statistically valid group. Representation of the broader community. So a simple minority majority doesn't really tell the decision makers, the council, that they have a balanced recommendation. So you're charged with working toward consensus, and I want to pause and make sure some people go consensus. Recall consensus means is that you can live with it. It doesn't mean that it's your favorite. And in fact, it usually is not everybody's favorite when we get to consensus. Consensus is something that you're not going to stand in opposition to. So we strive for something, a recommendation that balances perspectives and that everyone at the table can live with. But we also recognize sometimes there are fundamentally different values that drive it, and sometimes it's hard to get there. So for you, what level of agreement would constitute a recommendation that you go forward from this group and be presented as a recommendation of the group? And 3/4 is what we have in here. That's where most groups end up. So is that good with folks?
And also chairs.
Yes, chairs.
If you have thoughts.
Yes. So we talked a little bit about this before. I mean, I think that consensus is the goal and what we should be aiming for and striving for in the way we interact with each other and the way we're considering ideas. But I do need to clarify when all members can accept and will support the decision. You accept it and you'll support it as the valid decision of the committee, and then you're part of that discussion, not necessarily that, again, like you saying it was your favorite, but just standing by the decision, I think that it was the decision of the that they came to.
Yeah, that's great. That's well put.
And I would say that I think as we move along and as we build trust with one another, that's going to be a vital element to coming to consensus. Or and if we can't get to that point, I believe that 3/4 is the right number to target. I agree with Jean that if you're at a 50%, that's way too low.
I'd say it depends if I'm in the 1/4 or the 3/4.
And I should clarify too that all perspectives will be reported. So it's really how it goes out into the world in terms of how it's presented. Yeah.
On the consensus question, I think about it in terms of what happens after we have a recommendation and it goes to the public. If we cannot reach a consensus around this table, what are our chances of persuading the public to go for it? So I think it's very important that we try to get there, just from a pragmatic standpoint, because I'm worried about the outcome if we don't.
That's great. That's very good. I see a lot of nodding heads, but I also see some thoughtful expressions. Does anybody feel a sense of discomfort with consensus? This is also a lot of information to process, so it's kind of that, like, how do we fill the air to give you a little bit of time to think about this?
I'd rather be what I think is important.
Thank you.
But
that's how it usually turns out, isn't it, Jim?
Yeah. So are there going to be minutes?
Yes.
So we can review those ahead of time and make sure.
See the lovely young woman over there?
Hannah
Mills with Jay Leg. Okay. Does excellent meeting summaries.
Right.
And maybe one thing to clarify there is that what we're capturing our meeting summaries, not minutes. So they won't be verbatim, but they will hopefully capture the spirit of the conversation and not be 700 pages so that you can actually read them. If you do review them, we'll send them through to folks to review, and you feel that something that was attributed to you or that you made a point was mischaracterized, please point that out so that we can make sure that we're accurately capturing the spirit of the conversation here. So, yes.
Can Metro staff provide any information on how much context we're going to have to digest given that this is a complicated subject?
That's a great question. And I can try to answer. I'll say we are, I think maybe it was Hillary who in her online survey when said, are there any other translation services you might need, said transportation acronym translation services, which made me laugh. But we're preparing a couple small training sessions to do as part of these meetings on sort of the key elements that our council has expressed wanting to make sure everyone has some familiarity with. So that's Metro's racial equity strategy, Metro's regional transportation plan, and Metro's climate smart strategy. And so we'll have some short trainings prepared and do those as part of this process. And we will do our best to de-acronize everything and make this, everyone here brings, I think, a very high level of policy expertise in different areas and in different places. And we'll do our best to make that work and not assume that everyone is a transportation planning expert, a la Nolan Leinhardt, or a community housing expert, a la Sheila. So we'll do our best to make that work. The other piece I just want to make clear for Chair Bernard, too, we're really happy as staff to brief any of you in between meetings if you have questions, whether it's like either I want more information about this thing or I didn't understand this thing that happened or I thought we were having maybe two different conversations in this one meeting, can you talk through it? So we are here to staff you and make you feel prepared to participate in this.
So one of the other protocols on here I want to make sure to call your attention to
And it is, I'm very clear, and several of you have heard me say this through the years, my personal favorite one as a facilitator is that is the last one under draft of making task force recommendations, is that decisions will be respected by the group as final unless the task force as a whole agrees there's sufficient new information or reason to revisit it. And that is to address, you know, that one niggling idea that someone has that they will bring back because they didn't get it. And you all were going through that with someone before, if you weren't that person as well.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. And by the way, if I don't recognize you, just tap me because you're out of my field.
No problem. My question is, I think I saw in one of the previous slides that there's going to be a community engagement component happening simultaneously. I'm curious about how the two are happening.
Oh, and how those. So let me just finish this. So are folks good with that, this last one? Yes?
Yes.
Anybody not? Okay. So let's talk about that. And that probably kind of ties into the issues of what staff is going to be doing and providing to the group.
So our intention, we are going to be doing community engagement throughout this process, both culturally specific community engagement as part of our racial equity strategy and broad public engagement to give anyone who cares about this a chance to engage. Our intention is to always bring the results of that engagement to you as a task force to help inform your decision-making process. And also to bring that to council as well when they receive your recommendation. There occasionally may be timeline issues where there's one last community meeting that happens after this task force, in which case we'll provide just that, the result of that, to council. But our intention is to always have the engagement on the issues that you're discussing ready to be given to you to inform your decision. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, and I think we'll see how it plays out, because I know for the housing bond measure, for example, I think there were some community engagement efforts that went to council, and I'm not sure how they intersected. It just seemed like there was a parallel process, and it feels like they should be feeding to each other.
So we could put that in the protocols in terms of ensuring that the engagement process is well integrated, the guys are informed. Anything else in terms of what you'd like to make sure you get from staff?
Considering a piece of our last discussion, is there anybody here who would prefer not to have paper copies of things and prefer to have a digital copy?
Can we get one?
Two? Okay.
I think I saw two and a half.
Sorry. Yeah.
Four.
Maybe with respect to materials, just enough time, a reasonable amount of time in advance so that you can really repeat them.
How much time do you have for you?
I would say for me it's like 2 days. 48 hours would be great. Understanding that things change, but if there's a lot of meaty stuff, to have a sufficient amount of time to really review it before the meeting. And I think digitally and paper would probably be a good option.
Okay, so basically I saw this corner over here feel they did not need paper. And Casey?
Digital
for you too. Okay. And at least 2 days in advance.
That's kind.
Yeah, that's exactly
what I just one person.
48 hours is marginal for what I'm trying to do otherwise. That's like absolutely
bare minimum.
Bare minimum. I mean, 4 days or 5 days would be far better. I don't know if that's possible when we're meeting every 2 weeks. When we're meeting every month, maybe it's more possible.
So should it be something like strive for 5 days in advance?
I'd love
that. Okay, so the staff will strive for 5 days in advance. Sometimes there will be some things that can't. Okay, Pam.
And if you go that far, I'm okay with changes that need to happen, you know, bringing last-minute changes to the packet.
Okay, great. Okay. Anything that you'd like to make sure is in here in terms of what you get from council or from
the facilitators.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. I mean, maybe it's subject matter, not protocol, but you talked about the plans that are really important for everyone to integrate as they're thinking about this one, and you don't mention the regional housing block. I'm just curious. Maybe it goes without saying, but I would really like it to be mentioned as important as.
Yeah. Okay. So the regional
housing.
Oh, the regional housing plan. I'm sorry.
I mean, that investment.
Yes.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah. South border right
now. Especially with everybody talking about the integration of this with the housing. So, yeah.
Okay. Just as a housekeeping matter, I think public comment is best suited at the beginning of a meeting.
Okay.
So that people don't have to wait if they need to split.
So one of the things that we were considering is having up to 10 minutes,
let's talk about public comment.
Yeah. Having up to 10 minutes in every agenda for public comment, and really working with the chairs in the setting of the agenda, because yes, I agree that these are later meetings, folks have to get home if they want to weigh in. It might make a lot of sense in some meetings for that public comment to come at first, and could be something that consistently happens. However, there could also be discussion that happens around this table where this group might find value in the public, members of the public having the opportunity to reflect what they've heard or to share some of their thoughts and observations. So we wanted to build in that flexibility. We weren't locked into having it be one or the other, but that kind of collaboratively the chairs along with myself and staff could think about where it might make the most sense and have the most impact. Does that seem fair, or do folks feel really strongly about it being at one end or the other so people can plan accordingly?
And I will share, Emerald, that what happens... Oh, sorry.
I'm just going to answer. Go ahead.
That what happens on a lot of groups, sometimes we'll set it up, and I know that Pam has been on and at least one committee where we've done this, where the chair checks before they start.
Sure.
Say, did anybody come needing to address the group? No, then we'll go on and try and save some time toward the end. But if there is a big decision and there's information to be presented, oftentimes we'll have it in the middle before the group is asked to actually
whatever makes sense. I only care about creating a space for it to be meaningful and convenient for people who want to show up.
Okay. And we can even write it up there too. So
okay. So we have
I was going to suggest exactly what you just said.
Okay.
Check with the audience, and because you know, people with kids can't sit here and listen to us pontificate. Take care of those guys.
Chairs, is that fair on your end?
Yeah, I mean, I normally prefer it at the beginning, but I think that if it makes more sense to have a discussion and then have it before the decision is done, then that's when we can be flexible in that way. But I think you check in is disrespectful of everybody's time.
Great, we can go about it.
One of the questions you asked a few minutes ago was whether there's anything additional from staff.
Yeah, yes.
And to that question, I have reviewed some of these materials in advance. There are materials in the Metro Archive which I do not think accurately represent today's situation. Some of them were created 20 years ago. And a straight line extrapolation from 20 years ago is not necessarily what will serve us best in some of those cases. So as we get to discussion utilizing some of that, I hope staff will help us understand the history of those and acknowledge cases in which they may not be gospel for the basis for us making the judgment. I mean, there are ranges of veracity or statistical validity, and we need to be able to acknowledge that, not say, oh, because it's a Metro document, it's, you know, that's what we're working on. And so that will be a challenge to deal with. I know from looking at things and prior experience that there are ones that I would question personally, and we'll have to be able to talk about that with staff.
So I think that's something that we can take into account moving forward. Okay, so let's take a minute to recap. Let's make sure that we're all on the same page.
Can you do that? Can you also
And maybe I missed it, and I apologize if I was not paying attention, but just the time frame that we're looking at, and I know you've got some dates here, but
yes.
Are you driving for a decision by the end of May, or is that sort of phase one, and you've got multiple phases? I was just looking for that one.
So I think that there are two questions in what you're saying. One is, what about what times are we meeting, and how frequently are we meeting?
I'm more interested in the time frame.
Decision-making
overall time. You know, delivery of something.
Okay. Can you speak to that? Yeah. And I know we didn't print. Okay, I'm getting a no that we did not print. Next meeting we'll go over sort of the overall timeline of the decision-making process and the aspects of the task force we'll be asked to weigh in on. And it's a sprint from now till May to make a couple of decisions to allow technical work to happen, and then a little bit of you'll slow down a little bit through the summer, continue meeting but monthly, and then as you start to provide recommendations on the package overall, the fall will be a bit busier, and then continuing through as the final package hopefully comes together through May of 2020. But we will have that for you. Okay, so let's just have a little check-in time. Let's make sure we're on the same page. We're getting through this. On our draft protocols for making task force recommendations, it sounds like we're in agreement that consensus is the goal because it sends a strong message to council, right?
And to the general public.
And to the general public. Thank you. If consensus cannot be reached, even though we're going to work really hard to get there, do folks feel comfortable with 3/4 majority constituting recommendation of this task force? I see nods. Okay, so I'm taking that as full agreement by this task force. And people feel okay with that idea of decisions being final unless the group as a whole agrees to revisit it. Nods. Nods? Okay, great. For staff, there's some additional, in addition to what's outlined here, there's a couple requests that I did not write down in my paper, but I know Andy and Tyler put them in their brains. We're going to make sure that people have really access to information in a timely manner so that they can have time to review and to think about it. We're going to think about those documents. 5 days is the goal. We're going to think about how information from the past is presented and talked about in this context, and we're going to supply folks who want with digital copies and save some pages. And if you do decide that you would like digital copies or you got a new iPad for your birthday, I think you can let staff know, right?
Okay, to be clear, when we send information out 5 days ahead of time, that will be digital. We'll not commit to getting it in the mail 5 days ahead of time. Then we'll provide paper copies for those who want.
When you arrive.
Yes.
Yeah. And then in terms of public comments, we're going to allow for some fluidity there. The hope is that we can be as accommodating as possible to members of the community who might not be able to sit through a 2-hour meeting, and the facilitator, Metro staff, and the co-chairs will work together to figure out when that makes the most sense and do a little check-in at the beginning of a meeting to make sure that folks have an opportunity to share their comments if they would like to at that time. Folks feel okay about that? Seeing nods. Sounds good. Is there anything in your cursory glance of this document that you're going to go home and review with a fine-tooth comb? We have all this time to think about it that you'd like to bring up. Yeah.
So the last bullet on the last page references public comment and elaborated public comments in writing, mm-hmm. and a reference to submitting those comments by email. Mm-hmm. Are there going to be any other opportunities online, either surveys or other ways for people to contribute?
Yes, as a part of the broad engagement work that we are putting together, we plan to use all the tools we possibly can to get input. Just for reference, in the regional transition plan process, we were able to get 19,000 individual comments and summarize, categorize, so that the council JPAC others could see the breadth and depth of comment.
By the way, I do want to also point out, we often talk about the issue of alternates, and in your charge, I think specifically because you were each selected very specifically to represent your perspective, there's no provision for alternates, so just want to make sure there's clarity there, because that often comes up later. So... Shall I go do this one? Okay, so if you guys take your notebook, and please do spend some time with your notebook and understand what you have. The very last document, so after your second tab, if you go to the guide for volunteer committee members, you do not need to read this right now, but I just want to tell you, give you some perspective on what it is. I think many of you know this, but any group that is formed to advise a decision-making body, like the Metro Council, is themselves, by our law, subject to those same open meetings laws. So you are, by the fact that you are on a committee advising the Metro Council, subject to those same rules. And the Metro Council, with an S, as an attorney, has put together this to help you understand what some of those rules are. And it comes into play in terms of a number of ways. You know, you don't want to get together with, let's see, we have 35 members, so you don't want to have 17 people gathered out of this committee separately. That's
four of them. I'll go in the same car together.
It's not as big of a challenge with a group this big. But just spend some time looking at that. So are there any questions about that? Okay. I think that was it. Yeah.
Fine. If you have questions later about the fact of being a public official and these, what's written in here, please connect with us and we can help walk through some of that.
And I know I've gotten a couple of conflict of interest questions from folks. This committee will not be reviewing or awarding any contracts or determining the scope of contracts, so that significantly limits potential conflict of interest issues. So, just I've heard that from college people.
Okay.
Yes.
I know we haven't addressed it yet, but are there attendance requirements? I know we've got to figure out when we meet, but I'm sure that's going to create challenges.
That's an excellent question. As we all experienced tonight with the snowstorm. So, our hope is that you are all able to attend as often as possible. We know we're asking a lot of your time and we're deeply appreciative. Because of the quick moving nature of this committee, too, and because we're hoping that you're not spending a lot of time revisiting decisions, if you miss a meeting, you miss your chance to weigh in with that decision. The things that we want to do to make that work for you, a couple options. Number one, we will have a call-in option. We had a little bit of a janky one today. We will work on having a better one for next time. We are also willing, staff are very happy to talk if you're not able to attend a meeting and want to let us know and let us know how you would weigh in on the decisions that are being made. We'll work with the co-chairs to make sure that those opinions are put forward to the group and integrated into the conversation. And we would also hope that if you're unable to attend a meeting, you let us know ahead of time, and then we will can follow up with you afterwards and debrief to let you know what happened and what the next meeting will entail. So we are hopeful that everyone will be here all the time. We know that life happens. Sometimes we get rain and thunderstorms. Sometimes you're not able to spend 2 hours on a Wednesday night, and we will do everything we can to enable you to participate in that set of decisions and in the next set of decisions.
Yeah, so for the meeting schedule availability, the second Wednesday of each month is an impact.
And there's actually an error. I'm going to talk about that meeting schedule availability. I think we've accidentally copied a wrong calendar.
Okay.
So, and when we wrap up all of it. Thank you.
I'd like to just, because this issue came up of attendance, I want to say, I was advising somebody earlier, one of the dangers with a group this large is you may feel like you're less needed. You feel like you won't be there and nobody's going to miss you because the group is so large. You are all here because you have a very vital and important perspective. So I would just encourage you to really try hard to be here.
So I have a question, and I don't think this is something that we talked about before. At some point, we will be voting on recommendations, right? What's going to be our protocol around proxy voting? Like if somebody can't make it to that voting?
Yeah. I think for those, I don't know. My inclination is that we can work together to identify an option. I would say if people can send in a proxy vote and talk with the chairs ahead of time, we can find a way to make that work. But we might need to come back and revisit that.
And you as co-chairs may want to talk about that issue, because that means that somebody's voting without the benefit of the dialogue and deliberation of that meeting. So it would probably be a good thing for you guys to talk about and bring back a recommendation to the group.
Is there going to be audio or video of the meeting itself online we miss?
We are recording this. So that might be a worthwhile question for the group. We didn't want everyone to have individual microphones because it starts to feel pretty stilted and formal. So we're recording it through a speaker, and we will put it up on the web. If either it becomes a challenge to hear your fellow task force members, or you're listening to the audio recording because you so miss this group and the quality is bad, we can revisit if we'd like a more specific audio option. And the meeting summary will be available for you to have a written document.
Just around that issue, I also want to make sure that we are being, the meetings are accessible. If people have issues with hearing or it's hard to hear, that we're able to capture that. And I think even though microphones sometimes are stilted, that they do provide, you know, especially if there's a speaker system in here, that we can use that to make sure that everybody
Linda? I think it's really important, at least for me, to know on the calendar when specific votes might take place, because if we're going to have a calendar that goes out into 2020, I mean, I can control my schedule, and many of us can, to the extent we can. And so it would make it a lot easier to make sure that we were all here if we had at least knowing when, what months, which meetings we might be deciding.
And I think we can talk about that at the next meeting. Okay. We'll have more information to share with some of that process and timeline stuff to go through that. Because, yes, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, because in the short term, we all have commitments that are on a formula basis. I mean, we know those, but we might be able to control them beyond June.
So we do want to open up our agenda item for public comments, if there is any public comments. Chairs, is there anything that you'd like to end on? And does this group feel okay with taking these ideas and some of these suggestions that we've heard, refining this document and bringing it back to you? Chairs, I just want to see if there's... how you're feeling.
I think it's good. I think we've had some good discussion here, and if as people are kind of working their way through things and thinking things over, if there's additional comments, please feel free to reach out to us or to staff to share those so that they can be incorporated.
I have a question. Were you going to talk a little bit more about the schedule? I said you mentioned, okay, so I'll maybe save my question.
Yes.
Okay.
This is what we're proposing happens in our final 15 minutes. We'll open up to public comment. If we do have anybody who would like to share a comment, up to 10 minutes is what we've scheduled for. We'll see how many people are interested in giving a comment, and then we're going to talk about next steps, like scheduling and those pieces.
Pam? I just wanted to say that I appreciate all the input, and don't be afraid. There's some of this I'm like, oh, the schedule looks tough, if we don't know exactly where the decision places are going to be. But I think I have a lot of faith in the group that we're working with here and their ability to lay it out so that we can make good decisions and make them as a group. So I have a lot of confidence in our facilitators, and I have a lot of confidence in the experience that Metro staff has had in pulling these things together. So I think we'll be on point. And everybody recognizes if you can't be here, you can't be here. That's a given. But I do want to say, you know, I appreciate everybody's comments tonight. I hope that we, I leaned over to Jessica and said, you don't think that we have to say anything about, like, it's okay to disagree, and she looked at me like, yeah, I'm kidding. Yeah. And it's great, you know, it's very true, but I think that does need to be said, that, you know, this is a place where we can have open discussions, it's a place where we should be debating different issues and really working to come to best decisions. So that's the other, that's the last piece I'd like to throw.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Andrew, did you have... I was just going to ask about what's going to happen with the collective values here in terms of next steps and guiding the conversation?
We're going to cover that. Okay, great.
Yes. Our meeting center is going to be available online.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll hold those final writing questions that we have for next steps because we do have a couple items. But I'm curious if we do have any members of the public that would like to give a comment. We've got one. Anybody else? Okay, so I'd ask that we maybe take about no more than 3 minutes, and I can help you out like that.
Here.
Wherever you feel comfortable, as long as folks can see in here. Just go for it. Just go for it. Yeah, here.
Hello everyone, welcome to your first task force meeting. My name is Rita Zadong with the Street Trust, but here representing the Getting Together Coalition. I think most of you all received a welcome email in your inbox. There are a couple of you whose email addresses were very hard to find, so you only get those when we find them. The Getting There Together Coalition, we formed in 2017 to help create a community-driven vision for land use, housing, transportation, policies, and investment that our communities want and need. We're a growing coalition of about 20 member organizations. In the metro region, we've been convening to really advocate for what the constituents of our organization want, just and safe transportation system. We really wanted to take some time to applaud the work that Metro Council and staff has done in adopting really visionary plans that we think or that we hope are going to ground all of your work moving forward. Racial equity strategy, climate smart strategy, active transportation, and Vision Zero plans. And so I just, you all are having a values conversation, I just thought I'd share some of the values that we've shared with Metro Council and to you all as you move forward in this work. We hope you'll lead with racial equity, developing a transportation measure that helps create a metro region where race is no longer a predictor for how long or how well people are living. Creating a climate smart system, using this measure as an opportunity to prioritize improvements that align with our region's climate goals. Guaranteeing a safe system for all users. So using safety is really a primary metric to make sure that the people who this transportation system serves are truly involved, or depending on someone's ability, age, mode of travel, are really incorporated. And then also ensuring an inclusive and transparent process in developing this measure, working to make sure that those of us that are transit dependent, that do walk, that do ride our bikes, are really integrated in this decision-making process. And so I just wanted to say hi, we're here, we look forward to partnering with you. We will be following up with each of you individually, and we appreciate your dedication and service. It's really a lot of time you're putting into this. And let's volunteer, and it's kind of crazy. so thank you for your work, and we'll talk soon. Yeah? Okay, anybody else from the public? Yes?
It would be nice.
Would you like to stand up just so they can see you?
My name is Zet. It would be nice if there was a direct map line to St. John.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm not seeing any other hands for public comments. So we're going to close our public comment period and spend our last few minutes together talking about our next steps. So, our next meeting is March 6th. They're coming up fast and furious. So the agenda for that meeting is being posted
tonight.
And that's the focus of that meeting will be diving into this a couple things. One is thinking about timeline, decision making, and process. What we're looking at for the next while and going forward. Diving into that. Also spending some time to be grounded in Metro's racial equity strategy. So taking some time to do a little bit of that,
you know, what does this really mean? Getting a little bit of the direction, and I think that was one of the strongest tools from the council. And talking about this corridor approach. So in your binders, you do have this the document that council worked through that talks a little bit about this approach to corridors. So you can review that in your free time when you want to think a little bit about transportation, but we'll dive a little bit more into that and have some discussion around this corridor approach. So with that, there are some scheduling questions and possibly an ask for a longer meeting.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to turn it over to Tyler and Andy for this piece.
So, first of all, I do want to echo and just say that it was really exciting for Andy and I to sit here after thinking a lot about this task force over the past year, but in the last couple months for sure, and I know President Peterson is so thrilled about this group and all of you being willing to give your time and energy and experience to this conversation, and I am thrilled and confident that it's going to be really productive, so thank you all. On the business side, so as Allison said, next meeting we are going to talk a little bit about how to take the value views you talked about today and apply those to transportation measure. To that line, our council gave some policy direction and principles that they wanted, that they want to make sure the measure meets. That memo is in your binder. I think it has a blue tab on it. It does. So we're getting it to you 7 days ahead of time. So hopefully you have time to review. We'll be proud of ourselves for that one. And we're happy to talk through it if you have any questions and want to discuss. To help us schedule that other meeting, the reason the agenda is not posted right now is because we want to post it with time. And we heard differing time needs from you guys. We were hoping to have a little checklist in front of you that I think we copied the wrong times. So I'm going to ask you to handwrite them in. In front of your agenda, there was a piece of paper that said Regional Transportation Measure Transportation Task Force Member Information. And it says meeting schedule availability, and it has three checkboxes on it.
It's this one, though.
It looks like this. I'm going to blow those checkboxes out of the water. So the options that we would like to give you, and then we will collect what times work best from everyone, are the first and third Wednesday of the month, which will go down to the third Wednesday of the month after May. And we could have those meetings from 3 to 5. Sorry. From 2 to 4, 3 to 5, 4 to 6, 5 to 7, or this time 6 to 8. Please check all of the ones that work for you. So that's basically 2 hour slots between the hours of 2 and 8. Yeah, that's great. Yes, sorry. 2 to 4.
Still every other Wednesday?
Still every other Wednesday.
Ignore the Friday.
Ignore the Friday for now. So Wednesday, the 1st and 3rd, from 2 to 4, 3 to 5, 4 to 6, 5 to 7, or 6 to 8.
How about 9 and 11?
You want to make sure it is really exhausted.
5. Perfect time.
And then starting in June, it would just be the third.
The third Wednesday. And then we also can offer the Friday option. So the second and fourth Fridays of the month from 1 to 3 p.m. So that is the time. That is the middle box on your sheet. And we will collect those all tonight and quickly tabulate so that we can get an agenda up on the web. Yes, we'll send them to you.
So I'm Planning Commissioner Daly. I just wanted to remind folks in this room that Wednesdays are city council days, all days, so it would be really difficult for at least one member to come during the meeting on Wednesdays.
On that note, the other thing I should say, there are a couple folks who were unable to make it tonight due either to weather concerns or family emergencies. So there will be a few new faces at this table next week who we will have the pleasure of working with.
So. Your first and third Wednesdays still correspond to the dates?
Yes.
Starting March 6th?
Yes.
So, I have a question. Are other Wednesdays just out of the picture? As a question, because for me, that's my board meeting night, and I might have to step off if there are other Wednesdays, because I can't.
We have impact here, those days.
The other Wednesdays are hard for a number of folks.
Well, I can do earlier. I mean, I can do the earlier.
So staff have the daunting task of playing Tetris with the schedules of everyone. So we'd ask that you leave some written feedback on your forms. If none of these work and you need somebody to follow up with you directly to talk about what your specific concerns, please do note that, and staff are committed to getting back to those in a timely manner and come back with what will hopefully be an option that works for as many people as possible, recognizing that there are a lot of people that wear a lot of hats in this room. So that's the ask. The others are coming back. Watch this space. They'll be back next time in all their glory. Are there any additional questions, comments, concerns, hopes, dreams, or fears for people that we need to stay in this space before we go to the evening?
I was going to say that if you're going to give us a week's time, I will probably print my own materials, and then if you have any additional ones, you know, I'd supply that out there. So, because that's a lot of
electronics.
So electronic and any additional that you don't give by for 4 days ahead, supply them right there. That's most people probably would be able to read online.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, so there's also an additional request. Because we have so much that we want to do with folks, is it possible to add an additional half hour to next meeting? Write that on your paper if you're willing to do a 2.5 hour meeting next time.
Just as a one time.
Just as a one time deal. One time. It's so good. It's going to be so good.
You have to have lots of cookies.
Yeah. And coffee. Yep.
We'll have first, it depends if it's 6 to 8 or 5.
Right. Yes. So if you, some of that works, just write down any ideas or thoughts. Also, if you need to talk to staff about that afterwards.
We have an hour before or
after. After. So potentially like 2 to 4:30 or 3 to 5:30.
She wants to start.
Yeah. They want to really know the start times. With that, I'll turn it over to the chairs.
Thank you guys so much. I know I really appreciate everybody being here, if you were able to be present, for committing to this work. We do have a lot of work ahead of us. I think we talked found a lot of common ground on why it's so important that we're doing this work. Let us know, let staff know, as you're thinking about things, what else you need from us to make this a successful process for you. I'm really excited about all the different perspectives we have at this table, and we will be following up soon with lots more information. So thank you all for being here.
And I'd like to say thank you as well. I'm really looking forward to it. It is such a very unique opportunity for all of us around the table to make a difference for our children, our grandchildren, and those that came after us. Our predecessors did it for us, and it's now our turn. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Thank you. Have a wonderful evening. Get home safe.